Hello and welcome to Coffee House Shots, the Spectator's daily politics podcast. I'm Cindy Yu and I'm joined by James Forsyth and Katie Bors. So, the new Tory party chairman, James Cleverly, did not deny that there could be an early election on Sophie Ridge yesterday. What does this mean? Are we heading for an early general election? James?
I think we're heading for an election soon. I mean, the crucial question is when? And I think what the issue we see now is that Downing Street are suggesting that if they were no confidence at the beginning of September, Boris Johnson would not resign, would use those 14 days allotted on the Fixed Term Parliament Act to try and put together a majority. And if at the end of those 14 days he couldn't, there would then be a general election. But that general election, crucially, would be after October 31st. So in other words, their argument goes that because the legal default is that the UK leaves the European Union on October the 31st, that would simply happen during the election campaign. Now, on the one hand, you could say, oh, why would he want that to happen? Because that would, you know, the first few days after a no-deal Brexit are bound to be disruptive and difficult, and doing that in the middle of a general election campaign is not the ideal backdrop. I think it's actually a sign of a change in thinking in number 10, which is they are basically saying to these people, yeah, it's on you if you want to do that. You won't stop Brexit. Britain will leave anyway. But you MPs will have made it more chaotic than it needed to be. And I think what we're seeing here is this is the shift in attitude of number 10. Under Theresa May, number 10 was very keen to be responsible and be seen to be being responsible and doing the right thing in inverted commas. This number 10 is saying the right thing is to get the UK out of the EU on October 31st, come what may. And we're going to use every tactic in our arsenal to achieve that. You know, you want to go and find some, you know, medieval constitutional precedent for what you're up to? We'll go and find our own. And I think this idea that the cabinet secretary could tell Boris Johnson not to do this.
Who was floating that idea?
I think it's Dominic Grieve has suggested it, or a friend of Dominic Grieve has told the Financial Times that this is what he thinks could be done. I just don't see what power he has. Again, and you know, you could argue that under constitutional niceties, if a cabinet secretary advised the prime minister of something like that, it wouldn't be sensible to do it. The prime minister might listen, but there isn't any legal requirement on the prime minister to listen. And I think what we're seeing is for the operating assumption of this number 10 is unless you can legally show that we've got to do this, we're not doing it.
Katie, is an early general election within the government's gift anyway? I mean, in terms of maybe it's not up to them if there's a no confidence vote, which is on everyone's minds since Friday's by-election.
Ultimately, I don't think it is completely in the will of a government with a working majority of one when to call an early election. But I also don't think this is a government that wants to call an early election itself. This government, I think, and a lot of Conservatives are still scarred by the 2017 snap election, where Theresa May bit the bullet and called that election. I don't think voters take kindly, particularly to early elections. And I think here, what this new government under Boris Johnson is trying to do is look like it has a purpose and it is completely determined to take the UK out at the end of October by any means necessary, to use the words of Dominic Cummings. So, for those reasons, I think that it would not be, I suppose the word would be on brand, for them to suddenly call an election, which would be a distraction to their aim. I think the fact that they're preparing for an early election is because they do appreciate the fact that a no confidence vote with the numbers this tight could be something that they could lose. And that's partly why they're saying, well, we'll still leave anyway. But I think in terms of how they would pitch themselves in an early election, that you would want this almost, you know, the people versus parliament narrative. They would want to show that it was, or they'd want to try and argue that it was MPs who wanted to not listen to her, what voters had said in the EU referendum, combined with an intransient EU that would not compromise. And that is why everyone now found themselves in a general election. I don't think they would want to look as though they were the reason it happened. So, A, it's not in their gift, and two, I don't think they want it to be. But given the numbers are so tight, it does look like eventually it's going to happen. And I was struck yesterday on Westminster, our Tim Lawton, the Conservative MP, was saying that even if you manage to avoid this, avoid getting to a point where you have an election before you leave or around the time you leave, so this autumn election, it is just no longer really compatible or a reasonable situation to think that you can get to 2022 when technically the next general election is. Because we're a working majority of one, what can this government actually achieve? And you have a government that's, I think, doesn't really want to do much in the way of legislation because it can be taken with amendments and things that they don't want to do is likely to pass. So I just think there is a sense that this current situation, even if they somehow manage to get a Brexit deal, pass a last-minute concession, and no one brought down the government in the process, you still would be heading to an election, perhaps in the spring, because it just isn't a situation that can continue for that much longer.
Yeah, I think we're heading for an election because either the Commons brings the government down because it looks like no deal, or the government gets a deal, in which case it will want to have an election, taking advantage of the bounce that will follow that moment.
James, you suggested just now that even if there's a vote of no confidence, no deal could still go through. That's largely what Dominic Cummings said last week as well in one of his meetings, that Labour has missed the boat for no conning the government and stopping no deal. Is that true?
I think it would end up in the courts for certain, because we're in uncharted territory. They are right that, so the Purdah rules say that the government shouldn't do anything deviation from the kind of agreed proceedings during an election campaign. What that then turns on is, what is the agreed proceedings? Now, the argument, which strikes me as relatively strong, which is the law is that the UK leaves on October 31st. So to deviate from that would be a breach of these Purdah rules, because the government would be doing something big. Equally, the other side will argue that, hang on a second, once you leave, that's not irrevocable, but it's close to that. It's a massive thing. Wouldn't it be better to extend and let the new government decide? But, I mean, where all this turns is that electorally, any sense that Boris Johnson, because this is where the problem is, right, Parliament cannot turn up in Brussels and say we would like an extension. It's a Crown prerogative power, so only the government can request the extension. And Boris Johnson knows that if he requests the extension, even if it's because Parliament has passed a law dictating, I mean, some people in Parliament think they can pass a law that would dictate the exact form of words that Boris Johnson must use in his letter to the EU to request an extension. Boris Johnson knows that if he has ever signed a piece of paper like that, then that is the opening that the Brexit Party need to say, look, here's another one. You can't trust these Tories with Brexit. Ultimately, they will request an extension. So I think he knows that electorally he cannot do that. And so he will be determined not to have requested any extension at all. And look, this is obviously going to end up in court. I think you can see quite clearly what the case is on either side. I would think that in the letter of the law, the government's case was the stronger.
And Katie, over the weekend, Boris Johnson announced £2 billion extra in NHS funding on top of the £20 billion that Theresa May announced last year. What do you make of it?
So I think this is an example of, we're talking about early election, and part of the reason there's been so much talk of it is that this government has appeared to be in campaign mode from day one. And that's partly because of their focus on Brexit. But despite this almost single-minded focus on Brexit, they have been pushing this domestic agenda. Now, it is focused on specific areas, and I think areas that would probably come up in voter focus groups when people said perhaps their concerns with the current Conservative government. So we've had policing, getting more bobbies on the beat, had a push for the north of England, an area which we know the Tories think that they really need to win big in, or that's where they can get lots of seats to make up for the seats they might lose in metropolitan areas with their Brexit position. And now we have this NHS push. Now, it's about 1.85 billion which has gone there, and you have about 850,000 which is going straight to a certain number of hospitals. I think it's been pointed out today that if you look at which hospitals it is going to, there could be somewhere in the tactics a look at which seats the Tories would want to win in and which are marginal seats in a general election, because it's often places where the votes could be quite close. And you also have 1 billion which is going to general NHS schemes that are already in place. I think this is also because Theresa May, when she did announce that big boost, which you mentioned, when she did announce it, the Tories didn't get such a big, you know, cheers for it in terms of the polls. So it's to go back to it. But I think it's also the fact that we've spoken a lot about, if you look at number 10, it has a heavy vote leave presence now, the official campaign in the EU referendum. And I think that both Boris Johnson and Dominic Cummings really feel this need to actually do good on that infamous promise they had on the side of the bus of extra money to the NHS. And lots of people say it's not coming from a Brexit dividend, but I think that also if you look at things that Dominic Cummings said before he took that job, I think there was one blog where he said he could find the money within days to fulfil that pledge. So I think it is going to that, and it's A, getting election ready, but I think it does also touch on this frustration from lots of the figures in the Vote Leave campaign of Brexit under Theresa May, of things that they wanted to do quickly wasn't really up to them. So I think that's part of the reason we're getting such a big NHS push.
James, this £2 billion for the NHS comes on top of the £2 billion announced last week for no deal planning. That makes £4 billion already dipped into from Philip Hammond's £26 billion war chest. Are the Conservatives being fiscally responsible with this?
So I think we wait to see what the fiscal rules of a new government are, but this is not going to be an administration that is as fiscally conservative as previous ones. Boris Johnson has always been a fairly big spending conservative. I mean, I suspect that they will keep the fiscal rule that commits them to debt falling as a percentage of GDP every year. I suspect that the 2% limit on borrowing will. I would be surprised if that survived this autumn's fiscal events. I mean, the big question to come back to what Katie was saying is this, which is for Dominic Cummings, who is there is huge amounts of money to be saved in government with the inefficiencies of government. The question is, we've heard that a lot before. Can it actually be found one? And I think there's a second broader question, which is, you know, Dominic Cummings is very fixed on how electorally potent the NHS is and concern over that. So it's obviously going to get money. But there becomes an interesting question, which people say in some other departments, which is, do we want to be a health service with a country attached? And that essentially the popularity of the NHS begins to take you down that route. Given the ageing population, given that as countries get richer and older, they have a higher demand for healthcare spending. You know, if you basically carry on giving the NHS what the public think the NHS should get, you really do end up as a health service of a country attached.
James and Katie, thanks very much. And you can subscribe, rate and review us through all the usual routes. And if you're a subscriber to the magazine, we have an upcoming subscriber-only event with Sam Leith, our literary editor, and author Frank Dakota on his new book, How to Be a Dictator. You can find tickets at spectator.co.uk/frank. Thanks for listening and join us again tomorrow.